The show is sponsored by Dunkin' Cold K Cups. Dunkin' Cold K Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. It's convenient and tasty. You brew over ice, straight out of the Keurig coffee maker. You just brew over ice and you sip them in seconds. You're going to love these Dunkin' Cold K Cups. Enjoy the bold, smooth Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find Dunkin' Cold Coffee in the roasted coffee aisle. When you hear that Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, you're probably thinking, what's the catch? Well, there isn't one. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans for just $15 a month. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. All plans come with unlimited talk and text and high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Our producer, Sean, is a big Mint Mobile guy. Here's what he had to say.
For a fraction of the cost, Mint Mobile proved to have excellent coverage with no drop calls or unsent texts. Plus, they make it super easy for me to activate my device just by following a few simple steps online. And bam, done. It was great.
To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/literally. That's mintmobile.com/literally and cut your wireless bills to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/literally. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
First of all, good haircut.
Oh, thank you. And you have a nice little rugged post-quarantine beard.
It's definitely feeling a little The Revenant or Jeremiah Johnson.
Yeah, you got that going on.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Literally. Today is a treat. I love when I get to riff with funny, hilarious, smart people. And Patton Oswalt fits the bill. I'm just a fan. He's a magnificent actor. We're going to talk a little bit about my favorite performance of his. He's just one of the guys. He's on my list of funny people. And also, by the way, somebody that I would love to be seated next to at a dinner party. That's a small list, but he would be on that. Get ready for a rambling, but very funny and interesting conversation with Patton Oswalt. I love sometimes about doing this podcast is I have people I know and love on it, but then they give me the briefing document and I'm always like, wait a minute, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And the first didn't know that is just the little factoid that you were named after General George S. Patton.
General George S. Patton. My dad was a Marine, 20-year Marine, and he didn't want me to have like some forgettable name. And I think when he and my mom were going through the baby book in the late 60s, he picked the one first name that wasn't in there, which was the last name, Patton. So that's the one I got.
You've seen the movie, I'm sure.
Well, my God, yes. I mean, it's amazing. Still amazing to this day. Psychotic and amazing. Written by Francis Ford Coppola.
Oh, I am well aware. He won the Oscar for it.
Yeah.
A lot of people forget that Coppola, before all the Godfathers, he was a writer and wrote Patton. And I think he wrote, and you know, it's really interesting, deep dive here, is he rips himself off. I don't know if you ever noticed this in Apocalypse Now.
What?
So yeah, there's that great moment where there's bombs exploding everywhere and he's surveying the carnage and he goes, God help me. I do love it so.
Yes.
Right? And in Apocalypse Now, he has Duvall surveying the carnage and he says, someday this war is going to end.
Yeah.
And it's the same moment. It's exactly the same moment.
You're right. And it also has that thing where when he's talking about the smell of the napalm and he's like, he does that little like head shake like he's just sniffed a great wine. Like,
yes.
Smells like victory. Like it's that same psychosis where he maybe Coppola, related to that, of being drawn into something that you know is maybe destroying you a little bit, because he let his films destroy him in a way.
Oh, listen, on Outsiders, you never knew what Francis you were going to get on any given day. Because there was one day where he wanted to fire Tom Cruise and me and Matt Dillon and everybody because in the Screen Actors Guild contract, we have to have a place to change our clothes.
Right.
And he didn't want to pay for the trailers anymore. And they weren't like fancy movie star trailers. They were little tiny hovels because none of us were movie stars yet. And Francis didn't like paying for it for the budget. And he was like, fire. I'll never forget hearing him screaming and yelling and saying, fire all these fucking actors and I'll make the movie with University of Tulsa film school students. And I remember Cruz and I looked at each other like, oop, that's not good. He was an interesting dude. Okay, so you are married to one of my favorite people.
Yes.
The lovely and amazing Meredith Salinger. I was a huge Adventures of Natty Gann guy. I'm just going to lay it out there.
Yeah, that was her first movie. She was 14 years old, and she is suddenly riding the rails with a wolf for real running after trains. I think there's a scene where one of the trains almost tipped over while she was riding on it, and just like thrown into the deep end of acting. In a Disney film that, by today's standards, is pretty dark and pretty rough, you know?
Oh, it's like an independent film compared to what Disney would do.
Yeah, oh, that's a good way to think of it. It was all on location, all authentic and just kind of gritty. And yeah, you're right. It's exactly what it was.
It was, yeah, she was so good in it, so great. And you guys might be the cutest couple. Tell me about your podcast. I'm obsessed that you guys, because I thought I was the only person that texted my wife more than I talked to her. But apparently that's the sort of predicate of what you guys are doing on the pod, right?
Yeah, and you're not the first person that's told us that. We thought it would come off as kind of weird, and then the feedback has been, oh my God, I'm also, you know, like 20 feet away from my wife in the house, and we will text to each other. Here's how bad it got. One night, we're in bed, it's the end of the day, and we were talking to each other, and then we said, okay, good night, and she rolled over the other way and she found this really comfortable position. And then I was looking at something online and I found this amazing picture I wanted to show her. I was like, sweetie, oh my God. And she went, I have just found the perfect position. I don't want to roll back over. Just text it to me and I will. I texted her something. I was 2 inches from her. But she goes, I don't want to lose. I just found the perfect position. Just text it to me. And I wonder how many couples have done that at night when they're in bed.
I was trying to think of what it is about texting versus actually talking that is so compelling sometimes. And I'm reminded of when I was young, when we were young in our age before any of this. Yep. Do you remember going to like being in seventh grade and you would like write someone a note?
Yep.
And it was like the girl that you kind of liked and you'd sit in history.
Yeah.
And you'd like write them a note and you'd fold it up in all these weird ways. And then you'd slip them to them like it was a bindle of Coke in the hallway. And it was all very, very cloak and dagger, and you didn't know what they were getting. It was all very exciting. I think that's kind of what it is.
Yeah, and it's weird. There's these weird parallels where there were certain notes you would write where maybe you were giving up a little too much of your feelings. So there was always that, don't show this to anyone or throw this away when you're done with it. And then it gets shown to someone. And there are certain texts that, you know, friendships have ended because two people have been texting and then someone else like, a little show what this guy texted about you. And then that gets all blown up. And, you know, that's a big problem for teenagers. Their texts get sent around the school. And it's new technology, but the same old tensions and weirdnesses, you know?
I feel bad for kids, though. It's like pen to paper.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the other thing is I think what is the technical term for when you're looking at a text and you see the dots pulsating?
Yeah, what is that term? And that's a very real, that's a real emotional thing that everyone remembers is, oh, I'm waiting for the response. How weird is it when you see those three pulsing dots and you're still writing and then you're like, oh, they're already responding and then they never respond. So it's like, were they writing something and then did they delete it or what happened?
Yes, what is that? I really do want to know. Maybe somebody out there works at a tech company
can call in on the lowdown line and tell me what those are. Because I have two thoughts. One is that I want to know, did they write something and then delete it?
Yeah.
Is it a bug in the system? And then the other thing is why does it release endorphins? Like seeing those pulsating things, for sure it releases an endorphin in you, and that's why we're so addicted to
it. Yes. And also
it's Pavlovian.
It is absolutely Pavlovian. Just like when you send a message and that little check mark shows up that says it's been read or it's been seen. So then even if the dots don't show up, you still have that, well, they saw it. Are they thinking about, you know, how many times have you embarrassed yourself by you'll send a text and the little check mark comes up like seen and then nothing happens for 10 minutes. And then you do the 10 to like, I guess you're still thinking about your response or like you never seem more needier than when you're following up on the, are you going to say something? I saw that you read it. Oh God, I just feel so terrible.
What do you go with? I go with, I go with usually a question mark.
Oh yeah. Here's what I'll do. If I'm really needy, I will go with a question mark. I'll even put a question mark on my last text. Like, huh? Like I'm emphasizing that text.
Yes.
Or I'll do that BS thing. I'm sure you've done this too, where you're going, hey, I'm really busy too. You know, text me back whenever I got, like, you got to pretend like I got to hop off this call or whatever, but you're just sitting, they know you're just sitting there and you got to pretend like I'm running into a meeting. So just, I'll read your response later. You want to retain your dignity, but go, don't be offended if I don't respond to your response quickly. Like, oh God.
I know. And some people have and I have very poor emoji game.
Oh, me
my
too.
Emoji game is really poor.
Oof. My three go-tos are the thumbs up, the heart, or the laughing really big face with the tears. Like just because I just want to please people and go, yes, or I loved hearing that, or oh my God, you just cracked me up. But also, isn't it unspoken that if you send an emoji, it means the conversation's over?
Ooh.
But like I'm emojiing you and I'm about to bail out now. Like now the typing is done. Here's your thumbs up. I got to go.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, the one that really makes me feel that way is when they hit you with a thumb bump, like a fist bump.
Right.
But it's on the actual text. It's not even a response.
Oh, yes, exactly. When they just, it's like they footnote the response itself. That is also a very much like, we're done now. I got to go.
There's no other way to look at it. It's, we're done now.
Yeah. I got to run.
I gotta, which is more, here's when somebody says, yeah, I gotta run, that phrase, here's what I hate. I gotta scoot. I gotta run.
Uh-huh.
It just makes me feel small when people hit me with that.
Well, because you are instantly put in a pecking order and you're not at the top of it. That's what happens. Or as the great comedian Fred Stoller says, when you're on the phone with someone, you converse for a while and then the other person goes, anyway, like that's their way of, okay, and now they're bailing. We're done. We're all done. They're about to leave you. Oh, God.
Patton, listen, I got to scoot.
Do you have little text threads with like three or four friends that you check in? Like, it's almost like your own private Twitter where it's just you and a handful of your friends. Like, I have one with my comedian friend, like five of us, and we just rip on stuff. And it's like our own, you know, and sometimes we'll text something and someone will go, oh, you should tweet that. And other times we'll text something and someone goes, do not put that out publicly. That's just for us. Let's, you know.
Oh, I have a game I play with because my youngest son is a writer and is super worried that I'm going to blow myself up one day because I'm a middle-aged white guy who doesn't get it.
Yeah.
So he's like super, super. He feels like I walk around with the nuclear football every day of my life and that I just have no idea what it actually is. That's like who my son John Owen thinks I am, and maybe I am. But so he and I have a gag of like things that you could tweet. Like what's the fewest amount of letters you could tweet to end your career?
Yes.
It literally makes my heart pound.
Oh, yeah. I did a hashtag years ago called career-ending Twitter typos. And it's what is the one, you know, like if you just a typo that then everyone screenshots it and sends it around. You're like, oh my God. I think one of mine was, this is career ending Twitter typo. Okay. My dong is super friendly and loves being petted by children. That was one of my career ending. You just like, oh, I hit the wrong letter. I'm done. It's just, but hang on. How old is your son? Is he like in his 30s? Or?
This is my youngest. The youngest is 25.
So would you say, but he works as a writer. Is he, but he's clearly, because he just grew up with this stuff. Whereas for us, it was a new thing and a novelty. He's just very, very savvy about that. It's not like a weird.
Well, not only that, they type so I sound so old right now. This is awful. This is a horrible interview. They type so fast, these kids.
I don't know what's happening in the rock and roll and the hula hoop. I think the older generation is way more addicted to and drawn into the internet and the distraction of the internet than the younger generation, because they're so much more used to it. As a writer, I bet he doesn't go down the YouTube and Wikipedia rabbit holes that I do while I'm writing. I'll be writing something and then I'll be, oh, what was that? And then then an hour's gone because I've gone and looked at videos and stuff like that. I bet he can control himself a lot better than I can.
Here's the other thing. So I started on TikTok.
Oh, wow. I never got on TikTok. You have a TikTok account?
Well, here's why. So I was with a bunch of wildly successful, brainy people. But they were saying, look, TikTok in China, where it's from, is a totally different experience. Everybody's on it. Everybody gets all their news from it. It's everything. And that its algorithm for knowing you and what you like is by far the most sophisticated algorithm out there. And it is shocking. Like, you spend a week just scrolling TikTok and they will pull up stuff for you that you go, how did they know that I want to hear Walter Becker and Donald Fagen isolate tracks on Asia? How did TikTok know that?
Wow. Well, I'm sure you've experienced you go out shopping, but your phone's in your pocket, and then you come home and the stores that you visited are suddenly on your Facebook feed and suddenly being suggested on your Instagram feed.
Yes.
I mean, we've all experienced that now. But that, the TikTok algorithm, that's something different going on. I don't know what that is. They're either tuned into, they're listening to what you're doing in your house or what. That's weird. That is very weird. That's a different step right there.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's something you should, I mean, because then you can really go down some rabbit holes, because it starts pulling up the stuff that even you don't know that you like.
Yep.
Where else can you go surfing and skiing in the same day? Or check out a world-class art museum and camp out under a brilliant night sky same day? Or hike through the redwoods and get a luxury spa treatment? There's only one answer: California. No matter where you go across this state, you will find a way to play. I love California. And I have not yet surfed and skied in the same day, although I do both. So that is on my bucket list. It's the most beautiful place in the world. Discover why California is the ultimate playground. Head to visitcalifornia.com to start planning your trip today. Hey, listeners. Ever have trouble getting someone on the phone when you have a question about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. Join Macy's in an effort to shop more sustainably with brands like Carter's Little Planet, Oak, On 34th, Elemis, and more. Plus, to help bring more parks to more people, Macy's is supporting Trust for Public Lands Community Schoolyards Project, transforming vacant schoolyards into green spaces to help ensure healthy, livable communities for generations to come. Donate online or in store, and learn more at macys.com/purpose.
I remember, this is going to sound really strange. This is years ago. I remember seeing John Tesh on Politically Incorrect. They were doing a panel and they're talking about malls. And John Tesh said one of the most insidious things about how malls work. And this is before the internet. This is like in the mid 90s. He said, here's how malls work. You're walking through a shopping mall, and at a distance, you see a store that says just magnets. And you're all they sell is magnets. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Then you get closer to it, and you're like, oh, that one looks like a little scoop with jelly beans in it. That's kind of cool, like the way they did that. And goes, the next thing you realize is you're in line with four magnets in your hand going, what? Wait, what am I doing? Like, and that, in a way, he was describing how the internet works, but just how it was almost like that was a rough draft of how they pull you in.
But I love it. I mean, look, you're a master of it. You're one of the first people I ever followed on Twitter.
Oh my God.
How much time do you spend doing it? Cause everything you write is so fucking funny and just well thought out.
I do. And I'm trying to stop this, but when I wake up in the morning, I open Twitter. And I'll admit to that. And there's days when I haven't. There's days when I consciously go, okay, don't wake up and immediately open Twitter. But most days I do, because it's almost like when you open it up and you see what's trending, it's like you're given this weird abstract haiku of what's going on in the world and the news, and you have to it's that addiction. Like, oh, I got to put this together like a puzzle. Why is this person trending? Why is this thing trending? Why is what's going on? Yes. And then you reverse engineer why all these things are trending. And it's like you put together the world in your mind. So it's very, very addictive. And then I'll check it during the day, man. And sometimes when I have as a comedian, because you're right, it's the Pavlovian, it's the endorphin. If I think of a really funny joke, I want to tweet it. And then I'll sit there and look at the responses and just wait.
Have you ever tweeted a joke and then put it in the act? Like tested it out that way?
No, there's a way. I mean, that's interesting. There's certain comedians that can actually, like someone like Anthony Jeselnik, whose jokes are so perfectly crafted and stand alone. I think he has to actually struggle with Twitter, because he's like, do I tweet this out or do I put this in my act? But my act is so much more conversational that the tweet format, those are jokes that wouldn't have worked in my act anyways. But people like,
right,
Anthony Jeselnik, and especially Emo Phillips. Emo Phillips is one of the funniest tweeters out there. But I bet there's days when he has to go, do I tweet this or do I put this in my act? Because his jokes are so right there, you know? It was just like, so that, yeah, that's always been strange.
Yeah.
There's a tweet of yours that I always quote that I was like, did he struggle with tweeting that or going, this could be a thing I could maybe write? Or so you wrote this really interesting tweet. It was funny, but it was also like, oh yeah, where you said, look, I don't want to offend anyone, but the song American Pie was never that much of a mystery to me. Like, everyone is always like, what does American Pie mean? You're like, that's Dylan, that's Janis Joplin, that's the Burt. Why is this? It's not that hard to decipher the song. The song's still great, but you're like, why did this get this? That was such a great tweet. I remember reading that going, yes, why is it such a mystery?
You know what? I may put that in my one-man show, because that is it makes me laugh to this day. It's like,
yeah,
Don McLean explains American Pie. I mean,
you can listen to it and just, oh, well, that's Buddy Holly. Yeah, that's the Beatles, the Sgt. I know what this is. That's Altamont. Guys, it's not that hard.
I always think about things that make, I mean, I guess that's the difference in a professional comedian and a dilettante, me being the dilettante, is things that make me laugh that I'm truly obsessed with.
Yeah.
And then putting it out there, like, I'm obsessed with restaurants that call themselves factories. Like, why would anyone want to eat in a factory?
Right. You're right. And there's a bunch that do
everything
that.
About it is bad.
Yeah.
It says we make a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
None of it's special. It's loud.
Yeah.
It's like when I go to the ye old spaghetti factory, I'm like, hey, sit me next to the conveyor belt.
Yeah, exactly.
Could I get a room away from the machine? It's like, why would anybody want to do that?
And also, if the whole, if you go even deeper, it means this food, you're right, it's not special. It's also made joylessly by people that don't want to be there. if someone gets injured on the pasta assembly line, we just kind of toss them immediately. Like, you should, every factory restaurant you go to, like Cheesecake Factory, like, who's the shop steward here? I want to see how strong your union is. Like,
yeah, listen, I'm representing OSHA today.
Come in with a hard hat and a lab coat. I need to check your facility out. You're right. Factories in a lot of restaurants, and you're right, it's the most unappetizing word.
It is, and clearly somebody's like, I know, Cheesecake Factory.
Yeah. And this will be, and they'll get the irony of this will be, because obviously it's fun. It's not a factory. Even the word factory, it's an ugly word. Hard F's, hard C's, hard T's. It's the whole thing. And it shows up way too much.
Then add the archaic spelling of ye old spaghetti factory. When I was a kid, my first job was working at KTLA
on
Sunset Boulevard.
Oh.
It was a series called A New Kind of Family. And we would go to lunch at the ye old cheese, ye old spaghetti factory.
Right there on Sunset.
Right there on Sunset Boulevard.
Yep.
What do you gain by making it an old factory?
Like, when you come in, there should be like pigeons nesting up in the rafters, and a guy that clearly went insane years ago that lives in the duct in the walls and just wanders around. Also, spaghetti really reached its peak during medieval times. That's the best spaghetti during the Black Plague. Mwah, that was the best pasta. Ye old.
That's when people were eating. Ye.
Ye old, eh?
With the old E.
Yeah, they added
with the E at the end of the word old.
I remember that place. I went to lunch there once. I was working at Sunset Gower, one of my first jobs. I wrote on Mad TV, and we would either go to lunch at Ye Olde Spaghetti Factory or Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles. And after a few weeks, the producers, and not in a mean way, they had a point. They were like, if you go to lunch, could you try to avoid going to Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles, because whenever you guys come back, you nap for 4 hours, and we actually need you to. Because Roscoe's is one of those places that as you start to eat, you just, the food is so ridiculously good that you gain this momentum, and then you just want to lie down for like 5 hours when you're done.
Okay, let me ask you, because I am also obsessed with Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles. This is why you and I are separated at birth.
Oh.
First of all, do you have the waffle first or the chicken first?
You have the chicken first, but when they bring it out, you make sure that you pour the syrup on the waffle, you let it collide with the chicken, and then you pick the chicken out. So you're eating that really tangy chicken with a little bit of the syrup, and then that is your lead into the waffle, but you don't eat the waffle first.
I agree with you not eating the waffle first, but I do not want my syrup touching the chicken. Oh, basically, I want to have two meals.
Oh, okay.
I want to have lunch, and then I want to have breakfast in that order.
And then I want to lie down for 5 hours. The table should fold out into cots at Roscoe's. You can just lie down when you're done, because my God.
I've often thought about, could you open a restaurant like that serves those kind of meals where literally it's like you're in a recliner.
Oh,
basically.
Yeah.
And then you eat the food, and then you hit a button, and it becomes a bed. And you just get, you know you're just going to get an hour of an insane sleep in like a sensory deprivation tank type of situation.
You would have to be willing to pay an extra fee for that hour, because they won't be able to turn that table over. So you have to pay for
the
table that doesn't come in. But I bet there's people that are like, I'll pay for an hour napping after I eat.
I would pay for it. And then particularly if they had like the kind of people who would then come and like slowly massage you to consciousness and then ply you with an espresso and off you go. Think about what that would be, my version of a spa.
Yeah. That is getting into deranged Roman emperor territory there, but that's fantastic. How is that not available in Vegas? Get people so food drunk and happy, and you massage them back, and then you push them back out onto the gaming floor in this happy endorphin days, and they spend even more money because they're in such a good mood.
But the fact that no one's thought of that, you can go to a mall and get an IV,
yeah.
Literally a mall, yes. A strip mall, and get an IV to put fluids in you from getting all fucked up at night. But no one's thought of this. I don't get it.
Yeah. Actually, you can do that with that weird fluid thing to avoid hangovers. That's very sketchy. An IV drip in a mall.
Yeah, that's where I want to go. Yeah.
Could I be near a sunglass kiosk when we do this medical procedure on me? Is there still a Suncoast video company open that I can do my episiotomy near?
So good. I know what I want to talk to you about. I want to laud you, sir, for your performance in Young Adult. For those of you who never saw Young Adult, you are so spectacular in that movie. I love that movie so much. Did you love it?
That was one of those scripts that I was sent. I become friends with Jason Reitman. We met at a dog park. We both owned French bulldogs. So we met at a Frenchie meetup and started, nerding out about films because he's a big film nerd. He's like Quentin or Edgar, all those guys. And directors that also, when they're not directing movies, they watch 19 movies a day. So he was doing a table read for this script that Diablo had written. And we did a couple, he didn't have that part cast. So I came in just to read to fill that part at the time. And Charlize and I got along so well and our chemistry was just great. She has a great sense of humor. And he just said, well, how about you just play this role? Obviously I was thrilled because the script was so good, but it was very intimidating. The thing that ended up intimidating me way more was what a genuinely brilliant actor she is. And not in method sense. She's on that higher level where she can drop into that character and be Mavis and be this real, just a really repellent character. And she never, Charlize loved Mavis, but never tried to win the audience over to make her cute or sweet, committed to how horrible she was. And she could be that in the scene and then pop right out of it and just be Charlize and be fun and happy and cool. And then action and then boom, drop back into it. She wasn't one of those, I'm in character, don't address me as Charlize. She was on that Jedi level of being, and that was there. So, I worked for a long time with an acting coach, really got the part down. I did not want to show up not ready.
You're great in it. It's a great movie. She's great in it because she's so unlike.
Oh, my God. Never, ever gives the audience. And not only is she unlikable, the scene, someone pointed this out to me. In the nighttime scenes, when she's had a couple and she's dressed up, she's comfy and fast-witted and great. But in the daylight scenes, it's like her power's been drained out of her. And when you watch her walk, there's a scene of her walking along the road and she looks, it almost looks like it's a different actress. That is how completely she personifies how damaged this person is during the daylight hours. And it's just incredible to watch it.
Yeah. If you guys haven't seen Young Adult, it came out, 2011?
2011. Yeah. That's when that came out.
Let's talk about Mystery Science Theater 3000 for a minute.
Oh, yeah.
Because, perfect example. Guess what TikTok brings up for me? Mystery Science Theater clips.
Yeah.
Like how it knows that I love Mystery Science Theater, I have no idea. No idea. But it reminds me of how absolutely genius that franchise was. Did you love being a part of the new iteration?
Oh, my God. That show in the early 90s, when it was on the Ha Ha channel, wasn't even Comedy Central yet. It was the Ha Ha channel, and that was a local access show out of Minneapolis, and I'd never seen a show so perfectly capture what it's like to hang out with comedians and have us riffing, and also how the best comedy a lot of times comes out of, well, this is a boring situation, how do we make it fun?
Yes.
And that's kind of the ongoing thing about you can make, it was weird how it became very relevant during the quarantine and during the shutdown. Okay, we got to make our own fun here because we're stuck. And then also just for a big movie buff like me to see movies, where future stars or not even like the, in my mind, a movie is this big deal and it's an achievement and it comes out and well, it's going to be, but then you realize 90% of movies get made and then they're just gone. They're like, who made this? Why was this made? It's just out there in the ether. And people work just as hard on a forgotten film as they do on something like Citizen Kane or Chinatown. people still showed up and they were trying to make it good. So there's this, I have a real affection for that. Of, wow, they really did do this for the love of it. They really showed up and tried to make this movie. Even something like Manos, The Hands of Fate, which that the Mystery Science Theater episode, there shouldn't even be there shouldn't be a version of Manos without them commenting on it, because otherwise it's unwatchable. It's like an assault on the senses.
Yes.
But the guy that made it with passion and love and wanted to try to make something beautiful. It's like, oh my God.
Do you find yourself, my wife and I can't watch anything together because I am, I can't help if it's not really good. And I mean, really good. If it's not really good, I'm the, one of the, I'm like the robot. I'm there talking smack. And it's the most fun thing in the world to watch.
Yeah. I mean, it also shows you know, you're in a good relationship where you guys can watch something together that isn't good, that doesn't work, and you can still have fun. Like if you watch something great, oh my God, we're both enjoying this wonderful film. You watch something horrible and you start to comment and try to make it, especially, you know, Meredith has done, and I have done our share of bad films and bad TV shows. And we have so much when we're ribbing it, we come from such a place of sympathy, and we're still rooting for these people in this horrible situation, you know, looking at this stuff. So that, you know, if there's that extra element to it. I mean, Meredith has been in a couple movies that she thinks would be great on MST3K. I'm sure we've all made movies that you're like, the MST3K.
I definitely have.
I could run all over this.
I would love to do my least favorite movies of my own canon on that. It would be, maybe that's a new version we should pitch to Netflix. You and I do that.
Or they do an episode of MST3K where the Mads have captured you and sent you up to the satellite because they're like, we want to see if we can actually break the actors themselves. It's one thing to break Jonah, but if we could actually break these Hollywood actors and get them to do our bidding, and let's show them their worst work and see if they'll snap. But you end up having a blast making fun of it. And they're like, no!
I'm in. So are you on the road now with the tour?
Yeah, right now I just started touring, just back on the road, you know, doing theaters and for the most part, everyone's following some pretty draconian COVID protocols, because during the shutdown, a lot of these places almost closed. And I'm sure you've experienced this too with movies and TV. I've done a film, I've done a bunch of TV. They almost all shut down. So they're like, we're not playing around with people going, I don't know if I have my question.
Right.
Well, then don't work here. Like, just get the shot, show us your card, take your COVID test. So, you know, I actually feel pretty secure. So that's good. But yeah, I'm in New York right now. I'm doing this little black box theater off of Connecticut Avenue. I don't know if you've heard of it. Yeah, I'm doing the Kennedy Center. I sold out the first show, so they added a second one. So that
Come on.
Really good. Yeah.
Oh, what a thrill.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
I mean, I think you need to record it because, you know, live from the Kennedy Center is kind of, you can't top that, really.
Well, this is my warm-up tour for the Netflix special that I'll do next year, and maybe I'll film it at the Kennedy Center. That actually might be really good. Live from the Kennedy Center, me doing jokes.
Make sure they take you into the presidential box. It's pretty special. We're able to shoot a West Wing episode.
Oh, that's right.
In the box. It's pretty cool.
Where Bartlett faces down with James Brolin, and they have that little thing about crime. Boy, I don't know.
How great is that? Boy.
Oh, you just... James, I just love that he just leans into how hateful that character is, but makes him so charming. Like, oh, that's why he's almost going to be the president, because he's so charming right now.
Yeah, we were... I think we were the only people ever allowed to film in the presidential box. It was pretty cool. It's also the one where I give Siege, Leo McGarry's daughter the speech about space and why we explore, why humans are engineered to explore. Looking for a sparkling clean bathroom without so much hassle? Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner is here to revolutionize your cleaning future. Just spray today, rinse tomorrow, and voila! Enjoy a sparkling clean shower and tub
without any scrubbing. It's the secret to a hassle-free, clean bathroom that many are discovering. With over 33,000 five-star reviews, Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner has proven its effectiveness on shower glass, fixtures, tiles, and more, ensuring everything shines with minimal effort. This product has gained a loyal following thanks to its once-a-week application that makes it a standout in the cleaning aisle. Join the ranks of satisfied users who enjoy more me time and less clean time with Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner, available at Amazon, Lowe's, Menards, Home Depot, and Ace Hardware. It's the perfect choice for anyone wanting to simplify their cleaning routine. Don't miss out on a chance to transform your bathroom cleaning with just one application a week. Pick up a bottle of Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner today and join the thousands who've already made the switch to effortless clean. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. I know that for me, people are out, people are about, people want to do stuff, and we want to do it, but it can be a grind. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapist at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/RobLowe today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/RobLowe. I love fast cars, but there aren't a ton of high-performance EVs. They're certainly out here, there, but when I get a chance to get behind the wheel of one, I love it, and I was blown away by the Kia EV6 GT. When you get behind the wheel of the Kia, it is literally like being in a state-of-the-art rocket ship, but also comfortable. The thing goes from 0 to 60 in 3.4 seconds. It is the premium driving experience, and of course, it's an EV, so the climate thanks you. SiriusXM provides access to over 165 channels in the vehicle: music, sports, news, comedy, yacht rock. Let's go. Little Steely Dan going in your Kia. Come on now. So check it out today. It is the all-electric Kia EV6 GT. I had a blast checking it out. Believe me, you should do it yourself via kia.com/EV6 to learn more. That is kia.com/EV6. Kia, movement that inspires. Do you have a pretentious vocal warm-up? Because if you don't, I think you need to have one. I can give you mine. I mean, but I think you really need to have one.
It's weird. I don't have a vocal warm-up, but some of my comedian friends who are older are saying, get together with a voice coach and just get a basic vocal warm-up, because as you get older, you're going to need one, and it will actually help you to sustain if you want to keep doing this. So apparently, do you have a vocal warm-up?
I actually do. And
really?
And I've never had, knock on wood, an issue with, I did like 160 performances of A Few Good Men with Sorkin. He and I went to the West End in London after West Wing. And I never had a vocal, Kathy's a talking.
Yeah.
And I never had an issue, but I always had a vocal warm up. Took it really seriously. It's not a big deal, but I did every single day.
Yeah. I've been told that you gotta start looking at that. So, because I want to keep doing stand-up, and the acting roles I get tend to be very, very chatty. You know, I don't play a lot of dark, silent thugs.
Brooding.
I play a lot of fast-talking weasels trying to not get killed. So I'm the guy in the 1940s crime movie in the steam bath going, "Johnny, I didn't say nothing. You know, I never bang," like that kind of thing.
Oh, you would be so good in that.
Oh.
That's a good period for you. Have you ever done a period piece like that?
No, and I would, I mean, I did a kind of a version of it on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They go back in time and they meet, I play a character on S.H.I.E.L.D. and they meet one of my ancestors back in the 30s, a guy running a speakeasy. And I kind of look like John Polito. And I got this kind of a bit of an accent. I'm just like, you know, but no, I would love to do something completely set in a specific, especially the 40s or 50s, and just how, you know, messed up that world was and how fascinating it is.
You could use all those like handles on the dialogue that they had then that they don't anymore, like using the word see all the time. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. He's going to walk out around 5 o'clock, see?
Or the great lead up to the, that ain't the, yeah, your mother eats jelly beans. Like that kind of, there's always those weird noises they'll do before they land the line. I love it. I love that stuff. Love it.
Okay, before we go, I got to ask, because you're a huge, like, pop culture movie. It sounds really banal, but and I would never ask anyone other than this, you, because I value your opinion so much. Top three movies.
Of all time or what I'm watching right now?
Ooh, wait, first of all, I like the right now thing. I love that notion, because that means it's subject to change, which I think is freeing.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm going to name my top five movies of all time based on how many times I've watched them, for me, it would be Repo Man, Murder on the Orient Express, the 1974 one. Kurosawa's Ikiru, which I know that sounds pretentious, but that's an amazing, genuinely amazing film. And then probably Goodfellas. I mean, Goodfellas is just a perfect film.
Okay, I have a lot of thoughts. First of all, this is the best day of Emilio Estevez's life. That you put Repo Man above Kurosawa.
It's so good.
And Goodfellas.
Oh, Repo Man was, for me, again, you're asking about personal films. That represents such a personal time in my life when it's the mid-80s. I'm living in the suburbs of Northern Virginia. We got everything late. So punk passed us by in the 70s. I discovered punk when I saw the movie Repo Man, which I rented from Errol's Video. It was not available in the theaters, not where I lived, and could not believe this soundtrack, couldn't believe that the idea, because I just started getting jobs. It was the beginning of my employment, and jobs to me seemed like they were so crappy, and that movie made it seem like it was fun to have a crappy job, and maybe you'll encounter aliens and save the world. And the yes. dialogue was, yes. I'd never seen a comedy where everyone in the movie is playing it 1,000% deadly serious. No one's trying to be funny and get a joke. They're right. all like completely, no, there's nothing funny, which made it 10 times funnier. And yep. the scenes of Emilio and Harry Dean Stanton driving around and just talking are some of the best. And they're scripted. I don't think any of it is improvised, but it feels improvised because Emilio's character is giving Harry nothing. I don't know, fine, whatever. Like, he's just this angry child. And then Harry's just yelling at him. That just so reminded me of my relationship with my parents and my teachers. And I'd never seen it nailed that way on film.
The great Alex Cox directed it. I remember going to visit Emilio on the set of Repo Man.
You did?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. It is a very cool, underutilized movie. But I agree with you, by the way, on Goodfellas. It's my favorite movie of all time. Goodfellas is it. There's nothing close. It's it.
No.
I could watch it every single day. Every single day I could watch it.
And there's something new that you see in the background. Like the way he directs, everything is there for a reason. Even stuff that seems like it's throwaway. It's just perfect. I can't get enough of that film.
Here's my nerded out deep dive thing on Goodfellas. So I have so many favorite scenes. It's hard to pick.
Oh, God.
But the scene where Henry drives her back to her parents' house and he gets over and violently beats the shit out of, right? You know the scene. The tree is in bloom. Okay?
Right.
And way earlier or later in the movie, I forget which one it is, they have another entrance and the same tree is in bloom. And you go, oh, they shot those scenes on the exact same day.
All right, I have to
and
go
they're
watch
totally
again.
Different, and they're at totally different times in the time frame because Goodfellas takes place over like 20 years or whatever it is.
Wow!
So yeah, check that shit out.
Oh my God. Well, you know, the scene that everyone quotes obviously is the, you know, why am I funny scene with Joe Pesci, yes. Which is a great scene. But if you watch it again, listen to all the other actors in the scene. They're all, because apparently that scene wasn't scripted. Joe Pesci told Scorsese the story of a guy, of a mobster that did that to him. And he went, go do that to Ray Liotta in the scene. So none of the other actors know what's about to happen. And if you watch them, they're all responding. Like at one point he goes, he's a big boy, Anthony. He knows what he said. And then you can hear the guy mutter like, all right, yeah, you're right. You're right. Like they're all trying to, even though they're not the focus of the scene, they're adding to the tension by trying to calm Tommy down. Cause that was like Scorsese's almost stock company, basically of those great yes. character actors. And they're adding, I mean, the scenes between Pesci and Liotta, but all those other actors are adding all this other tension to the scene. And it's amazing that he caught all these little performances. I mean, that's just what an amazing director he is.
My favorite, by the way, I saw a director's cut of that movie.
Wait, where? What?
I was in Europe and I ran into Erwin Winkler in the lobby of the hotel I was staying in. I knew Erwin.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything to do. I said, what are you doing? We were in Paris. We can go shopping. He goes, I'm going to see a rough cut of Marty's new movie. You want to come? And I went to a little tiny screening room in Paris. I didn't know what I was seeing. Never heard of it. And I watched, I think it was the final cut. It was not mixed. You know, no effects, and it blew my absolute mind.
Was it in the order that it's in the film, where it starts kind of in the present day, then goes back?
Nothing different. It was literally Layla was in it, all of it.
Wow.
It was Goodfellas, but it was not timed. It was clearly probably his final cut with none of the bells and whistles on it. Remember, like when they used to have dissolves and they would do the magic marker across the screen.
Yep.
You know, instead of having a dissolve, like it had that kind of stuff on it.
Oh wow! Because that's a soundtrack for a movie, and Repo Man 2 has a soundtrack that even if you play all those songs in order without watching the movie, the songs tell a story of traveling through time. And here's the 50s, and then things are getting crazy. Then the piano part of Layla, which is that world is ending. And now it's just the insane cocaine 80s of Jump Into the Fire and Monkey Man and everything's going wrong. Like the soundtrack itself is as good as the movie.
Well, listen, people listening to the pod, if you don't love movies like these two idiots talking in this podcast,
yeah.
Don't get into show business. This is why we suffer the slings and arrows, and we've done just fine. I'm not saying we didn't, but yeah. This is why we do it, because we love it so much. We love, and also... We earn the right to talk crap about bad movies because we love the good ones so much.
Yes. And also when you know this, you watch a bad movie and you're like, I can tell where this was about to go right, but they made this wrong decision and this and this and this, and that's why it went wrong. Like, you know how movies can go wrong. And you can start off with like, oh, we got this good, and then it just goes the wrong. It happens all the time and it kills you. When you see what could have been a great movie and it doesn't work.
Well, someday this podcast is going to end. God help me, I love it so.
Yeah.
Thanks, brother. This was so fun.
This was great. So good talking to you, man.
Thank you. Well, if you've learned nothing else listening to this, you've learned that a factory is not a good place to go and have spaghetti. And I'm so happy that I found somebody that shares my hatred of factories to eat in. Factories keep the world going. Anyway, I don't know. I love having Patton on the show. He was awesome. You're awesome. I see the light is flashing on the answering machine here in the studio that is the Lowdown line.
Hello, you've reached literally in our Lowdown line where you can get the lowdown on all things about me, Rob Lowe. 323-570-4551. So have at it. Here's the beep.
Hey, Rob. My name's Wes. I'm from Hamilton, New Jersey, and I'm 23. I'm a young actor, and I just got enough hours for my SAG card, saving up money for that, and also saving up money to go out to L.A. early next year. I was just curious if you have any tips for, you know, I know you say a lot of stuff on the podcast for young actors and everything like that, but you know, I love doing this and going out to LA. I just wanted to see if you have any tips or anything, any guidance you could help me with. I love you. Love the podcast. Love your movies, your shows, everything. Thank you for what you do, man. I really appreciate your work. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Oh, wow, man. Hey, listen, first of all, congratulations on joining the Screen Actors Guild. Welcome. It's an honor to be in such a great union with such great esteemed company. And the fact that you've accomplished that is no small feat. And, you know, what people will tell you the odds, but you know what I say to that? Why not me? Why not you? Somebody's got to do it. So I always remember that. And, you know, for me is you're making the right thing. Is like, if you want to play in the Super Bowl, you have to go to the stadium. That's number one. You already figured that out. You got to come to LA. You got to come to New York. You just have to. Good on you for that. And then look, man, when you get out here, it's you just say yes to everything. And you never know where it's going to lead. You truly never. I mean, I got cast opposite Maggie Smith in a National Theater production of Suddenly Last Summer based on the director seeing me in Wayne's World. So, I mean, honestly, you just don't know. And all experience is good experience. And read a ton. Life experience is better than acting experience. And, you know, I think that training is great and acting teachers are great and can be great, but there are some bad ones. And a bad acting teacher can really screw you beyond all measure. So just be careful about that. Because, you know, as an actor, all you got to do is listen, be honest, don't act. Good luck to you. I hope I see you on a set one day. Don't forget to download the whole season. We've got really great folks coming up. So get ready, and I will see you next week on Literally.
You have been listening to Literally with Rob Lowe, produced and engineered by me, Rob Schulte. Our coordinating producer is Lisa Berm. The podcast is executive produced by Rob Lowe for Low Profile, Jeff Ross, Adam Sachs, and Joanna Solitaroff at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson at Stitcher. Our talent bookers are Gina Batista, Paula Davis, and Britt Kahn, and music is by Devin Torrey Bryant. Make sure to leave us a rating and review, and we'll see you next week.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Stitcher.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.